I'm very pleased to welcome to the studio today Sandy Walkington. He's here in his role as president of Arc and Arc, which actually stands for St Albans
and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society, a distinguished body.
A very learned society, I guess.
It is, I think, the learned society for Hertfordshire. I mean, it's 173 years young. It's one of the original county societies, and I guess there's a half a dozen or a dozen of them that were all founded at a very similar time in Victorian England. They reflected a growing educated middle class that suddenly woke up to the fact that progress, as created by the Victorian Industrial Revolution, was in danger of throwing away and destroying our heritage. And so this society started, partly it was concerned about St Albans Abbey, but it was also concerned about a number of other medieval buildings in St Albans. And that's why the word architectural is the first word in our title. They then realised, as they went on, that they were more than just architectural. So we then became the St Albans Architectural and Archaeological Society. They then started a collection which became the core of the City Museum. The museum had eventually opened in Hatfield Row, but initially it was just in a couple of rooms, and it was the society that pulled it together. And because it contained items which were more than just St Albans, it became the St Albans and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society. Now, since then, it's acquired many of the trappings of a history society, but it is more than a history society. So ironically, although the word history doesn't appear anywhere in the title, it is that, but it's more than that. It's the Arc and Arc, and it's a great St Albans institution of which we should be enormously proud.
Do you think it's well enough known?
No, it's not known. I get frustrated by the way that it hides its light under a bushel. I mean, we have over 500 members, but nevertheless, I'm always amazed at how many people I meet in St Albans who, when I describe to them the lecture programme, I describe to them the publications, I describe the archaeological work that we do, the research that we do, the library, and they say, why don't we know about this? So one of my tasks as president is to actually try and make sure that we do cast our bread upon the waters and actually get more people aware of us, because we are a fantastic resource and I want people to benefit from it.
How are we going to do that apart from getting one opportunity to go on the radio, as it were?
I'm starting to try and do more with social media. We're looking at our website, which when it was first created was, of course, as good as it got, but it hasn't been updated since. I mean, that's one of the problems with being a voluntary society and not therefore oozing with cash, but we are currently in the process of looking to update our website. I'm keen to make sure that we play our role in current issues where we have something to say. So, for example, there's a great deal of concern now about the local strategic plan, and it's quite clear that more bits of green belt are going to be built on. And we've got to be careful that we don't in the process destroy key archaeology which has not been dug up. But also, I'm very concerned that within St Albans, it's quite miraculous, we still largely keep the skyline and shape of a wonderful medieval cathedral city. And you look at our city from a distance, there's the abbey, there's the clock tower, which, by the way, this society saved when the Victorian Council wanted to knock it down. It was our society, the Arc and Arc, which actually led the campaign to save it. And we still look after it in partnership with the Civic Society. But there's that skyline. You've got the abbey. And again, the restoration committee for the abbey actually mirrored the committee of this society for a period. It was one and the same people. You've got the Curfew Tower and St Peter's Church, and it's a miraculous view. So again, what we have to be careful is that any intensification of development, because it is demanded by the government, we have to be careful that we keep what is special about St Albans. And I believe that we as a society have a role in that, and I'll be very happy to speak out on that.
You must work with the Civic Society at certain times.
We work very closely. For example, we worked together recently on the cleaning up of Waxhouse Gate. And Waxhouse Gate had been allowed to become very sad and down at heel. The property owner was equally concerned and was exceedingly helpful. It's been repainted. The next stage is to get lighting involved. And again, wearing a different hat, I happen to be county councillor for the area covering the Abbey. So I'm working with the county Council to see how we get lighting there, how to get the ironwork repainted, and how to restore some of the paving. Although one of my frustrations is that the paving is being damaged in part because the District Council has the Christmas market there and vehicles come in and smash it up. So one of the things I'm working on with the Civic Society is how we preserve and protect this going forward and make it robust for the future, but also a very special entranceway into the Abbey. So yes, we work very closely together and we work with the council. And I do want to pay tribute to the District Council because they are generous landlords of us insofar as our library is now hosted by the District Council at the Sandridge Gate Business Centre. And we're immediate neighbours of the archaeologists and also of the museum store. And so there's quite a sort of centre of expertise there. And then we work well with the council in all sorts of ways. And there's been a lot of overlap over the years. We've had presidents of this society who've been mayor, Claire Ellis, Kate Morris. We've had other people like Elsie Toms who were very distinguished members, and she was the mayor of St Albans. So there's a long history of working together, and I'm very keen to continue that.
Are you involved in the new museum and gallery?
The society has generated and raised a lot of money for that, and I pay tribute to my immediate predecessor, Helen Bishop, because she very much led on that, and there were various fundraising efforts organised by the society. Our name and brand is on the hoardings outside the museum as a major supporter. And as I say, that new museum and art gallery has come out of the museum on Hatfield Road, and we were the people that kicked off the museum on Hatfield Road. So we do have a sense of paternal pride, and we look forward to the new museum opening. We have our 175th anniversary in 2 years' time, which is a bit scary. And the new museum has very kindly offered us an exhibition at that time. And I'm keen to use that exhibition, not just to look back, but also to look forward and to see how we can involve local people and make them see that actually the local history is their local history and it's their past, and preserving it then makes something special for the future.
Your members, are they involved in just going to meetings, or do they go to lectures, or do they dig up remains? What do they do?
They do all sorts of things. First of all, obviously, they organise things like the lecture programme, and it is a fantastic lecture programme. I mean, to get that as part of your membership, it's amazing. I mean, there are 24 lectures in this particular year of 2017-18. For example, there's a major conference in London organised by Current Archaeology Live, which is happening shortly. And three of the people who spoke this last autumn are star speakers there, and our members got them for free because the lectures come as part of the membership package. If you go and hear them at Current Archaeology Live, even at the cheap rate, you're paying £89. We've shortly got James Clark coming to speak about St Albans people and their abbey, and he's a major expert on the abbey. Later on this year, he's speaking to another organisation in St Albans. People will pay £8 for the privilege. Come and hear him at the Ark and Arc, and it's part of your membership package.
What does the membership package cost?
Well, at the moment, hurry while stocks last, it is £15 per head. And then if you are a spouse living at the same address, £7.50. And then there are reductions for students and school pupils get in free. We are about to raise the sub for the first time to, I think, still exceptional value, £20 for a single membership. All those lectures come for free, and then £10 for the additional member in the household. But if you join after the 1st of February, but before the 1st of June, you will sneak in on the current membership fee, and that will be valid until June the 1st, 2019. So if ever it's a time to join, join now. Lectures is part of what we do. Research is part of what we do. And there are various research groups. There's a 17th century research group. There's a research group that did a fantastic piece of work on life on the home front in the First World War in St Albans. And the University of Hertfordshire published a book based on their work. And it was described as an exemplary piece of local history in one of the reviews.
These were volunteers.
Not paid to do that. And there were three people that actually pulled it all together, John Mean, Anne Wares and Sue Mann. But in total, there were 21 people that worked on that and worked on different aspects. First of all, they emerged looking and thinking, I helped create that book. But they also learned so much about research techniques, which they can apply to a project that they might want to do. If somebody comes to us and says, I've got an idea, we've got people who can help them. people that can give them advice, people that can point them at documentation or other material, and then help them bring it forward. I was discussing a possible booklet that we're doing on Percival Blow, who was the architect who did so much to create 19th century St. Albans, whether it be the Ryder Seed Hall and the Comfort Hotel or the Peahen Hotel, buildings that we just take for granted, most of Hall Place Gardens. This man isn't as well known as he should be, and an individual has said, hang on, I want to write about him, and we're helping bring that to birth, and actually that'll get published.
You referred to it earlier, you've got a library, you've got a resource of material that stretches back a long time, a lot of documents to go back.
It's a fantastic library. I mean, it's second only to the Hertfordshire Archive at County Hall. It's books, pamphlets, transactions, press cuttings, various bits and pieces of memorabilia. It's hosted at the Sandridge Gate Business Centre. It's a very big room. It's very well lit. North light, so there's no risk about damage to the books. And a lovely big table to sit at and work. It's open to people to go on a kind of drop-in basis on Wednesday mornings and Friday mornings. I think we would hope that if you started to use it regularly, that you'd be kind enough to join the society. And the same goes for lectures. People can come to the lectures if they're not members. But again, the presumption is if you go to more than two, then we do say, please consider joining a society, because it's people's memberships that pay for these things and pay for the speaker fees and pay for all the other associated costs, pay for acquisitions. Recently, we agreed as the council of the society to pay up to £200 for a single book. It's a very special book. It's one that we don't have. So that has to be funded somehow.
Where do you get your funds from apart from membership fees?
First of all, the clock tower. We and the Civic Society man the clock tower when it is open during the summer. And we do that on behalf of the council, and that saves the council having to employ someone to do it. And the council is then kind enough to say that we can keep the proceeds, so we share those. We have a number of outings that we do charge a modest amount for and can make money on that, going to interesting towns and places and being shown.
So somebody would propose, that'd be like a lecture program, but you've got a visits program as it were.
As well, there's a visits program. Okay. There's the Christmas and New Year party that we have. Now, it's not designed to make a profit, but it will make a bit of a profit. And then publications. We do sell our publications. Now, there's a cost in producing them. Sometimes that creates quite a cash flow issue, but obviously you hope that you will recoup and possibly make a bit of a gain. We're not out to make a massive profit. We are a charity. Our charitable purpose is to promote the history and archaeology of St. Albans and the understanding of it, St. Albans and Hertfordshire. But our main source of income actually is subscriptions, so we really value our members. Now, the members also get a quarterly newsletter, which is actually in itself a significant little publication, as well as describing briefly the previous quarter's proceedings in terms of the lectures and promoting the upcoming lectures and other bits of admin that have to be in. Each quarterly newsletter contains really interesting articles about St. Albans and Hertfordshire. So, for example, the most recent one asked the question, what links Ernest Shackleton to St. Albans? It's because Ernest Shackleton took with him a chronometer made by Mercers of St. Albans, now sadly gone, although the name is still used as a brand by another manufacturer. But Mercers were down by the old gasworks. They're memorialised now by Mercers Row, and their chronometers and clocks were well famous for their accuracy. Shackleton took one with him, and it's what he used to do his amazing open boat ride to get from Elephant Island to South Georgia, so that he saved all of his crew after they were frozen in the ice. And that's the link to St. Albans. Well, each newsletter contains little stories like that. There's always something. Another story was the Great Fire of St. Albans, which I must say I didn't know about before, but there was quite a serious fire up the east side of Holywell Hill into Chequer Street. It predated the construction of London Road, so that was a continuous row, and there was quite a big fire. A lot of in ruins were destroyed, and it led, in fact, to the creation of St Albans's first fire brigade. So each time you get this newsletter, you'll learn something new about where you live.
There's so much in this area. I was surprised that some of your lectures spread beyond St Albans district and even beyond Hertfordshire. I mean, some of your lecturers are coming to talk about things that would appear to have nothing to do with the area.
But they are absolutely fascinating. We are, as I say, a learned society. One of the lectures coming up is 100 years of history of Estonia. Now, I know extraordinarily little about Estonia, to my shame, and I'm going to go there and be deeply fascinated by that, and I think it will be very, very interesting. We had a talk in the autumn term on Tutankhamun and some interesting facts that may not have been public about his tomb and how it was excavated by an academic from Oxford University. I think what is splendid about the society is that it mixes the local with the national. Indeed, one of the early luminaries of the society was Sir John Evans, who was a fellow of the Royal Society and quite a famous Victorian scientist. And he came up with some of the early work about prehistoric man. And he came and gave a talk to the society on man and mammoths. Apparently, it was massively oversubscribed. And I think people just felt that this is an original university of the Third Age. It was actually an acceptable university for everybody. People who had not been to university could go and actually be educated. And I think we've got a big role still to do that.
Where are your lectures held?
They're held at the moment either at the Lecture Theatre in St Albans School, that's Friday evenings, or now we're at the Marlborough Road Methodist Church on Tuesday evenings. And the Marlborough Road Methodist Church has actually just been superbly refurbished, so there are beautifully comfortable seats and a reasonable sound system, and it's a very nice environment for speakers. Those are the two locations, and if you look on our website, you'll just see where the lecture is. If it's on a Friday, it's in St Albans School. If it's on a Tuesday, it's at the Marlborough Road Methodist Church.
Thinking of the archaeology, which is the second half, as it were.
The society did a massive amount of practical archaeology in its early years. If you like, that was when you could just turn up with a shovel and start digging without permits, etc. And because they were genuinely concerned to do it properly, actually, they did some very, very good stuff, particularly round the abbey. Then what happened was that the city council purchased the land where Verulamium Park is now and did that as an employment measure. It was during the terrible depression of the 1930s, and the idea was that they would create a new park and build the boating lake, etc., and this would give employment to local men unfortunate enough not to have other jobs. And the society said, hang on, before you do that, we ought to excavate this. And as it happened, Mortimer Wheeler was director at that stage, I believe, of the Museum of London. Apologies if I've got that wrong, but he was based in London, and he had ideas about how one could change the way that archaeology was done and do it in a much more careful and methodical basis. And he wanted somewhere to practice. And of course, St Albans was just up the road. So it was a partnership made in heaven. And a society greased the wheels and got it launched. It then, as I understand, became largely self-funding because people came to visit and bought postcards and came and looked. So Mortimer Wheeler and Tessa Wheeler come up to St Albans and they try out their various new techniques, including the famous Wheeler box, which is, I mean, for a long time was how archaeology was done. It's now moved on beyond that, but nevertheless.
What is the Wheeler box?
Well, it was just a very, very measured, methodical area which was dug out vertically, and every single bit of every single layer was listed. So you went down very methodically. I'm not an archaeologist, so I don't want to say much more than that without making myself sound very, very ignorant.
But well, so it's by comparison with scraping across,
yes,
digging,
or just
all
digging
over.
Away, exactly. It was very, very carefully done, and the boxes were on a grid with a little gap in between, so you had this little sort of crisscross, and that's how they did it. And they discovered these wonderful mosaics, they found the hippocorse, they excavated properly the theatre at Gorhambury, and those finds then went into the museum down at Verulamium. And again, the society was the begetter, if you like, of the original city Museum in Hatfield Road, and effectively it was the begetter of the proper excavation, the methodical excavation of Verulamium and the new building down there. Now, more recently, we've been helping Chris Lockyer, who is director of the Welwyn Archaeological Society, but is also a member of our society, and we've been helping him with new ways of surveying Verulamium, and he is using ground-penetrating radar and other similar technologies. So not actually digging, but identifying where there are things to be dug in the future. And one of the interesting things is actually how much of it wasn't developed. So you've got this huge area surrounded by wall, and we've always been told that Verulamium was the third largest Roman town in Britain. And in area, it is the third largest, but actually in population now, having seen how much of it was not developed, it almost certainly wasn't. It was smaller than that. Now, that's something that we've just learnt because of the work that he's done. And basically, you wheel this strange device back and forth across the fields, and members of our society, plus members of the Welwyn Archaeological Society, work together doing that. One of the things that I would like to think about is whether we could do some contemporary archaeology, if I can call it that, looking at the remains of the two world wars in St. Albans. There's some oral history that we could probably capture.
And there's probably people listening to this programme who have got connections with artifacts or
I'm sure.
books or
yes,
something
or things
that would be relevant.
Things that they found in their garden.
Thank you very much indeed, Sandy. You've got a tremendous enthusiasm. I'm going to have to join the society.
You are going to have to join the society. Yes, and join it now and you'll get it for 15 quid.
Now, if you want to find out more about the Ark and Arc, and especially if you want to join now before the membership price increase, go to the website stalbanshistory.org, and there you'll find out more about the programme of lectures, publications and so on. And you can also download a membership form. That's stalbanshistory.org.